So welcome to Discovering Buddhism, Transforming Problems. So this, I should stop with the acronyms because this one would be what? Not acronym. Is that acronym? Mm-hmm. TP. So we won't want to do that one. They like the DB and all those, or the DNR and all that. So welcome. I'm Jill Marie, just here to say hello, the center manager, and welcome to class. So who's new? We always do that each time. Brand spanking new. Well, hello, Sarah. So we probably have a few more people that will come in during the meditation and the gompa will fill up. But everyone else is going to tell you about the ins and outs. I just want to welcome you. And I received this in my fortune cookie today with Donna at lunch, and I thought it was good for this class. Ask yourself this question, is my attitude worth catching? So he's got Bodhisattva attitude. It all is going to come together for you. I love this module because it was... Oh, well, he's got the book, but we don't really know if he does or not. It appears he does, but this class was wonderful. It's really going to help you with your day-to-day life when those little pesky things come up. We can save the big ones for later, but this is a wonderful module, and you have a great teacher, so welcome. The other thing is, if you are so inclined, you might have realized all our classes are free, but they're donation-based, so if you feel your heart's moved, and you want to save on therapy, you can donate in any of the boxes. There's one outside the door and one on the desk in the front. And check's fine. You can go online. It's fine. Cash is fine. Love notes are fine. It's all fine. So thank you very much. Next.
It's going to be an hour and a half of announcements tonight. So plan what you want to say. I'm Donna Cease. I'm a co-spiritual programs coordinator. And Discovering Buddhism is in my little fiefdom. And as you are all aware, you're coming to the end of this two-year cycle of wonderful classes. So we'll be starting another two-year cycle in the fall. And that means that we're going to need to replace the irreplaceable, our dear Joanna, who's been program assistant through this entire cycle of Discovering Buddhism. So before I say anything else, please thank her. After this one, it's just Intro to Tantra.
Oh, just the last one.
Yeah. And then you need to cap it off by coming to the Light of the Path retreat. But if you don't come to the retreat, Rinpoche will be here for a day teaching. But that's not why I'm up here. The next cycle of Discovering Buddhism will be starting in September. And we are looking to fill Joanna's large, flowery shoes. So if you think you might be interested in, I have one person who's probably going to be doing some of it, and we could maybe, you know, there's all kinds of ways we can work out having program assistance for Discovering Buddhism. So if you are at all interested, maybe let Joanna know and get her your contact information, and I will talk to you. Thank you.
So good evening, everyone. I'm Joanna, for those of you who haven't met me or don't know me. And I want to just briefly talk about Discovering Buddhism in this module. If you didn't get a set of this handouts there on the table by the back door, please grab one because we're going to be going through them. The first page is just information about this module. Let me back up a little bit. Discovering Buddhism is a two-year cycle of modules in which we're covering very specific aspects of Tibetan Buddhism. In this particular module, we are talking about transforming problems. And as Jill said, it's a wonderful class for dealing with day-to-day life. There are 13 modules in all over a period of 2 years. This is the 12th of this cycle. We'll have one more class, then we'll take a break over summer, and then in September we'll start all over again with a new cycle of classes. So those of you who are joining us right now, it's a great time to join. You'll have summer vacation in no time, and then you can start up again in the fall if you find you'd like to continue with it. So this module is going to be 6 classes. It will be every Monday night and through May 23rd. We meet 7 to 8:30, and our last class will include a practice day, and that will meet from 7 to 9 p.m., so we'll stay a little bit longer. Now, if you miss a class, you can catch up by it's being streamed, which is why we're using these microphones, and ask you, whenever you speak in class, please use a microphone. I know it's awkward, but it's the only way we can, people who are listening to streaming or listening to an audio later can hear what you said, because his mic isn't going to pick up what you're saying in the class. So there'll be 3 mics available. Brian will have one, Bob will have one, and I'm going to sit back there and I'll have one. So if we see you raising your hand with a question or a comment, we'll come running at you with a microphone. So just wait for us. But in order to hear the streaming or access the audio recordings, you need to get access to the members-only area of our website. And that's and becoming a member is very easy. And in fact, if you're interested in being a member, our membership chair, Kim Lillig, would be happy to meet with you after class. And there are no dues, no club fees. It's being a member means that you support this community in whatever way you can. If it's with money, great. If it's with service, even better, because this is a volunteer-run organization. So if you are let me just ask straight out. I know I'm not giving you much warning. Is there anyone here who's not a member who might be interested in it? Okay, there are a couple of people. Okay, great. Well, then I'll ask Kim she's in a meeting right now, but I'll ask her to meet with you all afterwards. And when you came in the front door, there's a large conference table just right out there. She'll meet you at that table, and I'll try to remind you afterwards as well. Okay, so then you become a member, and you can access the online materials. There is required reading for this class. 2 of the books, Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand, and this book, Transforming Problems into Happiness, are available in our bookstore. There are also some readings that are available online at no charge. And if you turn to the second page of your handout, you will see instructions to accessing the materials for this module at the FPMT Online Learning Center. There's a password. You need to set up a user ID. It's really easy. The instructions are all on this sheet. And if you have any problem with that, just ask me about it, but it's pretty straightforward. And then there are materials that you can either just read online or download, whatever you want. The third page of the handout is a completion card. It outlines the requirements for getting you. If you attend all of the modules, you can get a completion card for the Discovering Buddhism series from FPMT, and a completion certificate. In order to do that, you need to turn in all these completion cards from each module. So this one simply describes your name, the module, attendance, the required meditations and practices and readings. And then at our last class, when we have the practice day, you can get your esteemed teacher to sign off on it. So we really encourage you to do this, because it means it's where you really learn stuff, is when you're doing the meditations, when you're doing the readings and thinking about it. Coming here is great. I mean, you need to come to class. Yeah.
No.
Oh. Yeah, I'm done.
Okay.
But we encourage you to do as much of the homework as you can, because it makes a big difference to you. I think that's all I have to say at this point. So, Shanka?
Okay.
No, it's, there we go. Okay, so welcome. My name is Shankar Mitra. For those of you who don't know me, I see some familiar faces, but I see some new faces, so it's great. I noticed that there were some people who came in who haven't been to these sec classes before, which is fine. I wanted to find out how many of you took the previous one, or at least have been coming to the... into. Okay. Okay. All right. Thanks. Okay. So why don't we get started? So we'll start with a meditation. So if you could take a comfortable seat. Instructions are that the most important thing is just to keep our backs straight, but you know, comfortable with a natural curvature, right? We don't want to hyperextend our backs, but just in a normal posture. And then His Holiness the Dalai Lama suggests that to calm our minds, especially towards the end of the day, we can do a short, just 3 deep breaths. And then just for a few minutes, we'll do a concentration meditation on the breath. So if you just bring your mind to the breath and settle on it. And for a moment, let's reflect on how precious our life is. Just the fact that we are born as a human being with all our faculties. We with teachers who are here to guide us, to interpret the teachings for us. So we have a life that, as it says, with which we can accomplish all our goals, our temporal and our ultimate goals. It's the only life that allows us to reach our highest potential. Not the animal realm, not the God realms, not any other realm. So just with this human life. So we must use it in the best possible way, practicing virtue, avoiding non-virtue, so that we can sow the seeds for our ultimate enlightenment, and with which we can guide all others to enlightenment. But unfortunately, death stands in our way. So we have to remember that we're extremely fortunate to have this life, but it does not last forever. So death is certain. There's no place we can hide. There's no human being, or rather sentient being, no matter how high or how low or how rich or how poor, how accomplished or how not, who can avoid death. Time of our death is uncertain. It's every moment it brings us closer. So our lifespan is continuously getting shorter, or rather the remaining amount that we have. And even when you think about it, there's so many things that are conspiring against us. In other words, there's so many things that cause death rather than cause us to live. So if you think about it, you know, the daily activities, you know, our car rides, which can lead us to accidents, pinpricks that can lead to infections, walking can step on a banana and fall. And even things that supposedly help us live also aren't inherently so. For example, in Flint, Michigan, the water that supposedly will nourish us is contaminated with lead. the food that we eat can give us problems that might cause our death. The air that we breathe. So there's many, many things that hasten it, and very few things that truly lengthen it, if any. And finally, at the time of death, there's nothing but the Dharma, the teachings, that will be of any use. Our wealth we have to leave behind. Our family, they can't come with us. Everything that we've worked towards, our education, all the things we've collected, all the things that we prize above all else, we leave behind. So this is not to depress us, but to really make us understand that this precious life that we have is very short. Extremely short. So we must use it in the best possible way, every moment. To really try to make the most of it. Is it just me, or is it warm in here? Yeah, all right. Would you mind? Oh. I don't know if it's... Okay. I thought maybe it was me, because I thought it was going to be a colder day than it was, so I wore this thing that comes up to my neck. So this module is called Transforming Problems, right? So it kind of builds, I think there's been 11 modules in the past already. So it's kind of like, you know, you've been, you've learned about karma, you've learned about refuge, you've learned about death and impermanence, you've learned about, how to establish a daily practice, what else? There's a whole bunch of other things that I'm forgetting. Yeah, that's samsara. Isn't that part of karma, the module? No, it's a separate one. Wow, great. Right, bodhicitta, the compassion. So all those things have kind of built up to this. So you kind of have the basis, right, of having an understanding. And this module kind of helps us to frame our daily life, which is unfortunately full of problems, no matter, even on a good day, to kind of frame our lives so that we can, we can make the most of our problems, right? Because the problems don't go away. Rinpoche says that you can kill all your enemies, right, at one after the other, right, if you are successful, you might be able to kill all your enemies, right? But the final enemy stays with you, right? Which is our own minds, right? The mind that is deluded, that is constantly dissatisfied, always trying to find fault, with always someone else, by the way, never with ourselves. So that mind, right, which he calls the enemy, because that is what brings us all the suffering, right? So that mind always stays from life to life to life. So the question is, how do we work with our mind so that when we do face problems, we deal with it not with anger or impatience, reaction, but in a virtuous way, right? So that we are training our minds even when we are having problems, right? So that's what this module is about. So I mean, I guess for those of you who are new, who haven't been to these sessions before, I hope you will come to the ones that start in the fall. You know, so then it will make you will really I think get a lot out of it. So where does this topic fall in the Lamrim, right? The great stages, you know, the steps one by one that lead us from where we are today to being fully realized, right? Like the Buddhas. So where does it fall? So if you remember, the stages are broken up into three main sections, right? So there's the ones instructions for the small people of small scope, it's called, one that's for people of medium scope, and then one for people of great scope. That does not mean that those who are on the great scope never need worry about the small scope or medium scope. It's just that that's a progression, but you still are always working on all the things at the same time, right? So this practice or this topic falls in the great scope, right? The scope, the set of the instructions for those who want to develop bodhicitta, right? Great compassion, which is different from just compassion, if you remember, right? Compassion is so the difference between love and compassion, right? There's a very clear distinction what love is and what compassion is, right? So love is wanting good things for those who are dear to us, right? Compassion is not wanting suffering for others, right? To try to help them with their suffering, right? So that's how love and compassion are distinguished. So great compassion, on the other hand, is this attitude. Also, it's also called bodhicitta. It's this attitude that just having compassion for others is not enough. I myself will take on the responsibility of freeing all others from suffering, right? I mean, if you think about it, it's it's an incredible goal, really, an incredible attitude, right? Is not just, you know, giving money to the beggar next to us, or it's not saying we shouldn't, but it's saying that I want to help all beings, right? Every animal, every insect, every human being, so forth and so on, right? And not only will I help them, I will take on the responsibility to help them, right? So it's easy to think, oh yeah, I'll help them, right? But it's actually taking on the responsibility to help them. So that's the attitude that the Buddhas have, right? The Bodhisattvas, you know, those who are training to become Buddhas, if you will, right? Bodhisattvas. So those in the great scope are on the Bodhisattva path, if you will, right? And so that's why this falls in that set of instructions, because this is about how to use this attitude of great compassion to destroy the, you know, the root of our problems, and we'll go into that. And ultimately, how by helping others we actually bring benefit to ourselves, right? So it's counterintuitive, right? I mean, we think that if we are always looking out for us, we will get there, right? But it says exactly the opposite. If we look out for others, we will get there. Because if we're always looking out for ourselves, we actually will never get there. We will constantly be in the cycle. So anyway, so that's where it falls in the instructions, right? It's towards the end in the great scope. So you know, we talked about, or we were doing a meditation about this human life, why it's precious, right? And you can read about it, why it's precious, and why it's so short, right? So we thought about that for a little bit. So the question is, what is the purpose of this life, right? So we have this life. It's a short life. We all get that, right? But what is the purpose in this life? So in Buddhism, the purpose, at least in our tradition of Buddhism, right, the purpose is to bring each and every sentient being to their ultimate potential, right? To Buddhahood. That's what our purpose is. To work always to bring all beings to Buddhahood, to enlightenment, right? To free them from all the suffering, to only bring them happiness, right? So that's the goal that we are asked to aspire to, right? To work towards, rather. And it doesn't mean that, you know, we are all, you know, we can't all be Mother Teresa's, right? I mean, we have, most of us have relatively small lives, right? We don't have such impact as some, you know, like Mother Teresa or many others, right? But that does not mean that we are powerless, right? Because the idea is that this attitude does not mean that we have to go out and physically be able to do something, right? But the idea is that we mentally are able to think like that, right? If we can do something like that, but be like Mother Teresa, that's wonderful, right? To be able to help all those kids or, you know, children and, you know, incredibly poor children in Calcutta. Because, by the way, I grew up in Calcutta, so I know what it was like. But, so it's an amazing thing, right, to be able to do that. But that's because she probably practiced for eons and many, many lives to become, you know, she, in her own way, doesn't matter whether you're Buddhist or not, right? These teachings are not about just Buddhists. I mean, it comes from the Buddhist tradition, but anyone can use them, right? So someone like her, you know, when she started many lives ago, let's say, she was like us, right? But if you have the attitude that may I bring all beings to happiness, right, and I will take on that responsibility. If we have that attitude, that's the first step. Right? If we don't have the attitude, we will never be able to do it. Right? I mean, there's somewhere it says, I can't remember which text, it says, all great things, or something like, all great things begin at the tip of a wish. Right? So if we have the wish, then we will, at someday, we'll be able to realize it, right? So that's the way to think about it, right? It doesn't mean that, oh my God, I'm not doing anything, so I'm not able to keep this ideal, right? The idea is to keep it in our minds at all times, and we'll talk about it during this, I don't know, five more sessions as to how our spiritual teachers say to think about it. Right? How we can put it into practice. So that's what we're told is the purpose of this life. And so if you think about it, how can we It's a great, you know, some of you who took the class on refuge, right? So if you think about it, when you think about the great beings like Mother Teresa, like Rinpoche, for those of you who have met him, like His Holiness Dalai Lama, like many others who are practicing today, right? Who are close to Buddhahood, if not already a Buddhahood today. That's an incredible object of refuge, right? What does refuge mean? It means those who will lead us, who will bring us out of our own suffering, right? All this life of problems that we have, if you will, actually many, many lives of problems that we've had and we will have. So those are the beings who are guiding us to lead us out of these set of problems, right? Samsara, we call it, right? The cycle of, or as the Buddha called it, the cycle of birth, old age, sickness, death, and all the stuff in between, right? This continual cycle. So those are the beings who have this incredible altruistic attitude who are our object of refuge, right? If we see them and if we see what they're doing and have educated faith in them, right? We can be just like them. And the instructions, and that's what this class is about, the instructions that they give, right, on how to be like them, is what, if we put it into practice, will lead us down the same path, right? Because these are beings who have traveled the same path that we are traveling, right? It's not like our path is new, right? They've already been down the path, right? It's a well-trodden path. The real work for us is to actually put it into practice, right? Because, you know, we can read a lot of books, we can go to a lot of teachings, but if we don't actually put it into practice, you know, if we don't use the teachings in our daily lives, right, to transform our minds, because that's what Buddhism is about, right? Transform our minds. So if we don't do that, then we're not really getting it, right? And that's what having these objects of refuge is about, right? If we see these beings as objects of refuge, then we will work like them, right? Think like, you know, follow their teachings, right? So we talked about problems, right? So the class is called Transforming Problems. So the question is, why do we have problems? Right? Why isn't our lives just one endless stream of happiness to happiness, right? You know, what Buddhism says is that the root of all our problems is this thing called ignorance, right? And ignorance is not knowing something, right? But ignorance, actually I won't go there right now. So the root of all our problems is ignorance, right? And the ignorance is about this self-grasping mind that we have, right? That we're always thinking about ourselves, right? We have this belief of who we are. We have this solid understanding of who we are, right? And we are always we are always just thinking about that one thing, right? And from self-grasping comes self-cherishing, right? So that's the next step, right? Because we are very attached to the self. We will do anything for this self. And from birth, as Rinpoche says, right? By the way, when I say Rinpoche, I mean Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who is up there on the, I can't see from here, your far right, top right, right? So it's Lama Zopa Rinpoche up there on top far right, His Holiness Dalai Lama in the middle, and then Lama Yeshe, who has passed away quite a while back, about 30 years back. So Lama Yeshe on the left and Lama Zopa Rinpoche on the right were the founders of our, of this tradition, if you will. And they both were students of, or at least Lama Zopa Rinpoche was a student of His Holiness Dalai Lama, right? And so, yeah. In any case, so as Rinpoche, so when I say Lama Rinpoche, I mean Lama Zopa Rinpoche. So when, I lost my train of thought now. Self-grasping, self-cherishing. Ah, right. So what, as Rinpoche says, thank you, Joanna. So as Rinpoche says, from birth until death, that's all we are doing. Every moment, we are doing something out of self-cherishing. Every moment, if you think about it, we put on nice clothes because we want to make ourselves look good, or we buy a fancy car because, well, there are many reasons. One, I don't want to make any judgments on you, because I used to actually have a very fancy car, and I realized why I had that fancy car. It was all about self-grasping. At least for me, it was self-grasping. There was no question about it, right? I still have that fancy car. It's just that it's about 25 years old now, so it doesn't look all that fancy anymore. So I have it because it runs amazingly. It still runs like it used to, like when I first bought it. But in any case, so it's everything that we do is because of self-grasping. We go to college, we get an education. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't go to college or shouldn't get an education or shouldn't buy a nice car or a fancy car or shouldn't have a promotion or shouldn't work really hard at work. The real question is, why are we doing these things? Right? I mean, that's the thing that we have to ask, right? Because we never ask. We assume that because the next guy is doing it, that must be the right thing to do. Right? So Buddhism doesn't say that we shouldn't do any of these things, right? What it says is, understand why you're doing those things, and maybe what you're doing is correct, right? On the other hand, maybe it isn't, right? So what it says is that, Buddhism says, is that if we're doing it because we want to make ourselves look better than the next person, pride, let's say, right? Or if we're doing it because, it inflates our ego, right? Then it's not the right reason, right? Then it's probably not the right thing to do. And this self-grasping and self-cherishing is an incredibly toxic thing. The reason is that that's the main reason why we are wandering, as it says, wandering the six realms over and over again. The six realms, hell beings, hungry ghosts, animals, human being, God realms. And what am I missing?
Hungry ghosts.
I said hungry ghosts. Wait a minute. Am I missing something? Hell beings, hungry ghosts, animals.
Gods, demigods.
Maybe the demigods are part of the sixth realm. But I can't remember. Anyway, 5 out of 6. That's not bad. So we've been wandering all these realms over and over and over again because we're constantly feeding this self-grasping and this sense of self that we have. I mean, that's basically it. I mean, we've always been doing it. We are still doing it today. And, as one of my friends said, how's it been working for you? Right? And it's true. You have to really think about the logic behind it, and I'm not going to go into all the logic right now, But if you have a chance to read the Lamrim text or His Holiness's text or Rinpoche's writings or whatever, you'll see that it is true. That everything we do, it's like, you know, another example. I don't know, maybe Geshe-la used this example. He says we're like the moth around a burning flame, right? We see the flame. I mean, we're told, the teachers tell us, the flame, right? They tell us over and over again, the flame is there. You know, you are doing it because self-grasping. You know, that's the flame, right? But we are just blind like those moths. You know, we are just going around. We just do the same old things over and over again. And it's not like, you know, we haven't had teachers in our previous lives. I mean, this is not the first time we're being told. We've been told this many, many times. And we probably will be told many more times. Hopefully not, actually. But nevertheless, you know. And that's why it is such a toxic thing. Right? It's the only thing that continuously are leading us from birth, old age, sickness, death, constant unhappiness, and suffering, basically. Right? And so what it says is that if we are able to cut it at the root, which is this self-grasping, right? If we're able to cut it at the root, then we can realize, you know, our full potential, right? The Buddha nature. Each of us has, you know, if you remember, it says in the teachings that each of us, right, no matter how high or how low, every sentient being has the seed of Buddhahood in them, right? They call it the Buddha nature. So each of us here in this room and elsewhere in this world have that seed, right? So each of us has the potential to become the Buddha, all Buddhas rather, right? Each of us has that potential. It's not like the Buddhas are some, you know, it could only happen one guy 2,500 years ago, right? There are many Buddhas who have enlightened beings, right? Who have, you know, since, right, in the last 2,500 years and before, but all since, right? There are many enlightened beings even today. It's not like, you know, it's somebody up there and we can never get there, right? So this is all achievable. It's a lot of work. But if it were easy, you know, we would have done it by now, right? So if we can cut it at the root, then we can get there, right? I mean, that's the goal of all of every single instruction, every single practice, every single prayer, every single ritual, every single text, every single teaching, every single whatever else we can think of, right? That's what it's about, right? Is to cut it at the root. There's just many ways to get there, and you have to can't just use one way. You have to attack it from many different angles because it's so ingrained in us, right? And so we have to recognize that, right? So that's the first step, right? Actually, I was reading, by the way, I know that in your text, or rather, in your required reading, it talks about the book called Transforming Problems, right, Rinpoche? So if you ever get a chance, there's another amazing book by Rinpoche called Bodhisattva Attitude, right, which I'm sure is out there somewhere. It also happens to be quote-unquote free. It just means that, you know, whatever donation you can feel like giving to the, you know, the non-profit organization that publishes these books. Anyway, so this is a set of teachings about, it's a long, well not long, but 200 pages about what this class is about, right, essentially. But this is a collection of his teachings from the last couple of retreats that he held in North Carolina, in Black Mountain. Every year we have this retreat. Rinpoche comes for 2 weeks, and we have this retreat. And so he's coming in August? Yeah, I have to take my son to college. I don't know how I'm going to have to miss like part of it. Anyway, we'll see. So Rinpoche is coming, and this book is a collection of his teachings of these retreats. and the first couple of retreats. And so it's about having, you know, this attitude that we're talking about today, and we will talk about the next five classes. In here, he says, you know, when we were talking about self-cherishing and self-grasping, right? So he quotes a text from Lama Tsongkhapa, and it says, hang on, I've got to put my glasses on. So it says, if you don't purify negative karma and defilements quicker and quicker, being totally under the control of very forceful karma, even though you know this is happiness, that is happiness, you are powerless to choose. Even though you know this is suffering and that is suffering, you are powerless to free yourself. Right? So basically what he's saying is, if we don't know why we suffer, right, because of karma, you know, he talks about karma and defilements. Defilements is a delusion, mental delusions we have, right? So if we don't purify our karma and delusions, right, and if we don't understand it, right, no matter if we know how to get from here to there, he says you are powerless to free yourself, right? Because we're like that moth around the flame, right? We have to know every moment, right, of our lives, why we're doing what we're doing, and are we doing it because of self-grasping and ignorance, right? And if we are, find a way to not transform it, right? That's the idea. It's not easy, right? I mean, if you think about it, you know, every moment of our day, we are. I mean, and you can do this exercise, by the way. I mean, you know, if you have the presence of mind, because it's easy to forget, right? But if you have the presence of mind, do this exercise, because I did this exercise for at least half a day. And you will find that there is not a single moment that goes by that you are not thinking about yourself. Or at least for me, I was not thinking about myself. Right? You know, seriously. Even when I am thinking about a loved one, I'm thinking about myself. You know why? Because that loved one is annoying me. I mean, even though I love that person, right, I find him or her annoying. Because of me, right? It's about me. It's not about the other person. You know? It's about expectations that I have about that other person. It's what I see that person for who he or she, I expect he or she to be, not who he or she is, right? All those things, right? It's about me. So you will find that every moment of every day, we are practicing self-grasping and self-cherishing. And so that's why, right? Because we continuously are doing the same thing over and over again, and we are in this prison, right? Gyanpoche said this, right? We are in this prison with invisible bars. We can't see it, but it's there. And so that's what this is about. You are powerless to free yourself. And then he says, Lama Tsongkhapa says, therefore, reflect that action and result are non-betraying. Non-betraying meaning it will definitely happen. That, you know, the karma is definite, you know, if you remember, right? If for any action, whether positive or negative, right, there is a result, right? Positive or negative. It's a universal law, according to Buddhism. It doesn't matter if you're Buddhist or Hindu or whatever else. It doesn't matter if you're on this planet or not. It's true. Right, so that's what. So the reflected action and result are non-betraying. Look now to choose between white and black karma. I mean, good and virtue and non-virtue. Right, to choose between virtue and non-virtue. From this day, take care not to create negative karma. From this night, attend to virtue. Right. So that's what transforming problems is about. Right, is every moment. How can we transform whatever is happening at that moment to virtue? And it can be done. You know, Geshe Lo talks about this on Sunday mornings all the time. If you remember, he says, well, no matter what you're feeling, he actually uses this hand gesture, right? He says, transform it into something positive, right? And he says, if you can't transform it into something positive, because sometimes you know, our mind is in such a negative state, it's very, very difficult to think something positive, right? So he says, think something neutral. Get it to neutral. Right? If you can get it to neutral, you can get it to something positive after a while. So that's what transforming our minds means, right? Is that how can we go from the negative attitude to something positive, right? Because that's what it's, because virtue, if you remember, karma, right? What is the basis of karma? Karma, the action, right? Karma, by the way, in Sanskrit just means action. Nothing more, nothing less, right? I mean, there's a lot of connotations that have been added to it in the West, but that's all it really means. It means action, right? By the way, it comes from the same root as, you know, kri, which is create, creation. The same thing as karma. It's the same exact root in the Indo-European languages. But anyway, so karma means action, but that's not, so any action by itself is neither positive nor negative, right? If I give money to a, just the action of giving money to a beggar is neither positive nor negative. What actually creates karma is the intention behind the action, right? So I can give money to a beggar because out of great compassion, right? That's a positive, you know, creates positive merit, karma, right? I can give money to the beggar because I want to make myself feel good, or make myself feel bigger than the next person, or whatever else, right? There are many ways to do this, right? So then same action becomes negative, right? So it's all, again, all in the mind, right? So that's why every moment, you know, the way to remove, you know, our ignorance at the root is to transform it in something virtuous, a virtuous thought, a virtuous intention. If we can do all our actions of body, speech, and mind from a positive, from a virtuous basis, right, the sky's the limit, right? I mean, basically, we can truly make progress. And that's, again, what this, you know, transforming problems is about, is that, you know, when we are that negative state, even when we are facing problems, how can we have a positive attitude, right? How can we still learn from it? And so you'll see, like, you know, so that's, those are some of the things we'll talk about. So we must develop renunciation, right? Buddhism talks a great deal about renunciation. And renunciation doesn't mean that we become hermits, et cetera, right? Renunciation just means that we give up attachment, right? We try to look and see where we are, again, cherishing ourselves and give that up. Right, that's what renunciation is about. So again, you know, having a fancy car, there's nothing inherently bad about it, right? But if we do it out of self-grasping, then it does become, you know, poisonous, right? Or it becomes negative, if you will, because it kind of feeds our self, you know, the ego, right? So, because without renunciation, you know, let me back up a little bit. So if you remember we talked about self-grasping, right? From birth to death, Rinpoche talks about how, you know, we're doing everything because of ourself. So if you remember the eight worldly concerns, right? The eight worldly dharmas, right? So there's every moment of our day in our lives, we want, you know, there's the four opposite ones, right? So we want comfort, we want gain but not loss, right? We want pleasure but not pain. We want a good reputation and not the bad reputation, right? And praise and blame, right? We want praise and we don't want blame. So those are the eight worldly concerns, right? The four opposite, right? So again, if you do that exercise, you will find that every moment you are doing one of those eight things. Okay? Every moment. We are either we're feeling great because somebody praised us. We're down in the dump because somebody blamed us, right? Or, you know, it hurts. We want pain. We don't want pain, but we want pleasure, right? Something good, you know, something whatever, right? Something pleasurable is happening, right? Either we're eating ice cream or, you know, whatever, right? Et cetera, you know, so you can figure it out, right? But that's what the eight worldly concerns about, and that's what we're doing constantly, right? So we have to understand that. So every, you know, when we are feeling whatever we're feeling, our mental attitude, negative attitude or positive attitude, most likely it's because of one of those eight things, right? And if it's one of those eight things, you know, it's guaranteed that it's a negative attitude, right? Because praise and blame and pleasure and pain, those things are because of our ego again, right? I mean, this pleasure, the pleasure that they're talking about here is not the pleasure of, seeing, seeing something great happening to someone, right? This is pleasure about ourselves, right? So when, if we recognize that we are constantly just following these eight worldly dharmas, right? Eight concerns. Then we get the sense of that, you know, this is the thing that's causing me all these problems, right? I mean, I've spent, you know, I'm 50 now, right? I've spent 50 years doing those eight worldly concerns, right? Has it brought me any greater happiness than I had when I was 20 or whatever? No. You know, it's been the same, just about. You know, it really hasn't helped me, right? I mean, that's the understanding we have to get to. And so when we get to that understanding, we have this great aversion, if you will, aversion to this way of being, right? This constant self-grasping. And then that's renunciation, right? When we realize that the constant cycle, and we say, okay, you know, I've got to stop. I've got to find a way to get out of this, right? That's renunciation, right? Yes.
Are there people?
By the way, you can ask me questions anytime.
Are there people who become attached to unhappiness? That they, you know, they don't really, they gain so much from being miserable?
Sure.
And when it's suggested that there's another way to use their mind, they just can't consider it.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, I think, you know, I think each of us probably knows someone who is, you know, there are people who, I don't know what the word is, revel, thank you. Revel in their unhappiness, right? I mean, you know, but the funny thing is that they're doing it because they think it's going to bring them happiness. I mean, you know, if you think about it, right? I mean, we who are standing outside, right, we can see that, okay, this clearly is not working for this person, right? But that person can't see it like that, right? That person thinks that it's bringing them some measure of happiness because, you know, they're getting some happiness out of complaining. You know, I used to know someone who constantly complained about their lot, right? So, you know, or they were trying to somehow get my sympathy or empathy, whatever, right? I mean, all these things, right? There are many reasons why, you know. So, but they think that it's bringing them happiness, right? As I read one, you know, I remember when a light bulb went off in my head many, many years ago when I was first getting into Buddhism, when I read one of His Holiness's books, and he said that every person, animal, insect, whatever, being, right, at every moment is doing whatever he's doing because he thinks or she thinks that it's going to bring him happiness. You know, the person who's doing the worst thing possible, the person who's doing the well, I don't want to say the best thing possible, but most good things, is doing it because they think in that moment, the next moment, is going to bring them happiness. You know, when they're hitting, you know, when they're hitting somebody in the nose, or, you know, they're murdering somebody, or they're helping somebody on the street, or whatever it is, right? It's because it's going to bring happiness. I mean, even if it's the most twisted thing possible. It's just weird. But that's how it is, because we are like that. You know, we think we are much, you know, we have discrimination, and we have intellect, and we have all these qualities that separate us from the, you know, animals, if you will, right? But if you think about it, we are just as instinctual as the animals are. You know, we are doing the same things over and over again out of just pure instinct. You know, we're just doing it in a higher functioning way, I guess, if you will, right? We're not instinctually looking for food and, you know, roaming for, you know, next animal to, you know, or the next food, whatever it is, right? But in a way, we are doing, basically, we're living our life just instinctually, without thought, without reflection, right? And that's the problem, right? And that's what, you know, that's what Buddhism is about, right? To cut it at the root. You know, to have some reflection, right? So, you know, so anyway, so I had written some notes, and, you know, one of the things I was going to talk about, you know, was the faults of self-cherishing. Well, I think the faults of self-cherishing are pretty clear, right? You know, and the funny thing is, as Rinpoche says, you know, we've done all these, you know, we think that, you know, we got to do all these things in this life, let's say, right? But we've done all these things before. I mean, every single thing, because in Buddhist logic, right, we've had births and deaths for beginningless time, right? So if you've had endless, countless lives, right, just about anything that you're doing today, you've already done before, right? I mean, so we're constantly striving, you know, for the, you know, we're treating our ego to the next whatever else we're thinking about, right? That's going to bring me happiness, right? It's not like that's the first time that I'm going to buy the fancy car, whatever. I've had fancy, whatever, equivalent of fancy cars many, many times in the past. It's not something new, right? But every time, every life, we're constantly doing the same things over and over again. So that's the counterintuitive thing, right? Is that every moment we are looking for happiness, but every moment we are bringing ourselves, you know, pushing ourselves backward further and further, right? Constantly. Geshe actually talked about that once. You know, every moment we think that we're trying to make us go, you know, we're going forward, right? But actually we're going backward. Or standing still, whichever the case may be. So that's the thing we have to understand, right? And so now the question is, how do we do this, right? I'm speaking a lot about, you know, why, you know, and the reason I'm going into some of this detail is because, you know, there are people who haven't had some of the, you know, classes in the past. Maybe for some of you this is, you know, old knowledge, right? But it's important to understand why, you know, how, you know, to get to how we get past this, right? We have to understand why we are here today, right? So, you know, what are the, you know, so the texts talk a lot about the benefits of cherishing others, right? Because, you know, we don't want to cherish others. It's against our nature. I mean, we cherish others that we like. I mean, that is true. I mean, you know, if it's my wife or my kids or my parents or my friends or whatever, right? I'll cherish them. But if it's someone else, right, I couldn't care less, really. Venerable Robina, for those of you who have met her, has a great story, right? So she says that, you know, she goes once a year, she has like a beach retreat. She usually goes to Central America somewhere, and she like goes on retreat and she reads and et cetera, et cetera. She goes for a few weeks, I can't remember. And So she has her iPad with her, and she was reading the New York Times or something like that. And she's Australian, by the way, you know, for those of you who don't know. So she's from Australia. So anyway, so she's reading the New York Times, and it says that some boat capsized, you know, and there's 200 people dead in Tasmania. She says, oh, my God, you know, terrible, how terrible, Tasmania, you know, that's my backyard. She's telling the story. That's my backyard. And, you know, and she was feeling really bad. So she started reading it, right? And then it said, oh, it said Tanzania. And she goes, oh, I couldn't care less. You know? I went to the next article. Couldn't care less. Right? So that's how we are, right? If it's our tribe, in this case, kind of like that, right? If it's our tribe, I will cherish others, right? But if it's someone else, I couldn't care less. In a way, I'm kind of making it a little, you know, extreme maybe, right? But that's and then of course if we have someone we dislike, you know, in the text they talk about enemies. I'm not sure we really have enemies in this, you know, anymore. You know, I don't know, but there's certainly people we will go to great lengths to avoid, right? So. And if there are people we'll dislike like that, then, you know, sometimes, you know, we're kind of happy that bad things are happening to them. You know, I mean, you know, I remember, you know, I mean, I'm just going to throw this out, but I mean, you know, I remember somebody telling me about, you know, something happened to George Bush, right? And this person was a big George Bush hater. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I mean, I'm not a great fan of George Bush, but I wouldn't want, you know, that's not very kind, right? I mean, you wouldn't want something to wish something bad on a person, right? Just kind of like that. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that I don't think like that, because I do. I mean, there are times when I think like that, right? I'm happy that something, you know, I read a newspaper, I'm happy that something bad happened to somebody that I didn't like. I mean, kind of like there's a fleeting thought in the back of my head. Right, and that's what I'm. That's, you know, I mean, you if you notice, you'll find out that it's true for you too. And that's when we notice that we really don't cherish others. It's not in our nature. But you know, the great thing is that we can learn to cherish others. You know, these practices that they talk about, right? They really do work. And we can learn to cherish others, and we will find that, as counterintuitive it might be, that when we cherish others, it brings us the greatest happiness. Not just in this life or in the next week or in this life, but in every life to come. Right? I mean, that's the beauty of it. Right? And so, that's why they spend a lot of time in talking about the benefits of cherishing others, because it's not natural to us. And if you remember, you know, I'm sure you discussed this in the previous class, I guess, when they talked about bodhicitta. You know, other sentient beings are the cause of our happiness. You know, if you remember, they must have been talked about that in the topic, right? And other sentient beings are the cause of our happiness. Why? Because, you know, they said if we didn't have other sentient beings, then we wouldn't even be here, right? Number one. Right? We wouldn't have this human life. We wouldn't have this life, period. Right? Everything we eat, everything we drink, every whatever you can think about, every car we drive, it's been created by someone, helped by someone, right? The education that I got, you know, when I went to college, you know, I didn't have much money. You know, I got a couple of scholarships, and I did a work study, and I took some loans. You know, I got the federally subsidized loan, whatever they call it, Pell Grant. They used to call it the Pell Grant. I don't know what it calls now. You know, the Pell Grant, you know, there were lots of taxpayers who paid for it, right? So I did, it's not like, you know, so whenever someone says he's a self-made man, he's not really a self-made man. He depends on a lot of people, a lot of other beings, right? So that's number one, right? And number two it talks about is that all our, you know, we can only get there by practicing great compassion. And if we don't have other sentient beings to practice great compassion, then how will we get there? Right? I mean, or another way they say is that, you know, you should see all your, you know, you have, when someone annoys you, it's a great opportunity because it gives you an opportunity to practice patience, right? So that person, in a way, is your, you know, friend, right? Because through that person, we are gaining the attitude, right? Or we're able to cherish another person, right? If we are able to practice patience. So we cherish others because, you know, they are the cause of our happiness, right? And it talks about how, you know, the cherishing others is what, you know, is the seed that produces the Buddha's qualities in us, right? The Buddhas who have great compassion, right? You know, it talks about Shakyamuni Buddha, you know, the Buddha 2,500 years ago. He wasn't like the Buddha all the time, right? He was just like us, right? So, and he also had a seed, and it grew, right? Through the same practices that we're being asked to do, and became who he was, right? So we have the same seed, right? So these practices can produce the Buddha's qualities in us, right? And we can see that when you see Rinpoche, for example, you get that sense, right? If you see His Holiness Dalai Lama, and if you see, I mean, you know, you and you see other teachers, you know, you can see it. When you can see the Buddha's qualities in them, right? I mean, you can see that they travel the same path that they're giving us instructions. I mean, you can see that it's not academic, you know. So that's why teachers, you know, I mean, those of you who've gone through the spiritual teacher module, right? That's why teachers are so amazing, right? Not because, I'm going to make a digression here, but not because they are necessarily, we don't really get it, you know, most of the things that they say, right? So we only put a small 10% of what they say into practice. But one of the great things that they do is they inspire us, right? When you see teachers, they really inspire us. You can see the qualities, right? You can see the qualities that we ourselves are aspiring to. And so they kind of model it for us, right? You can see that this is a person in flesh and blood, right, who is, you know, he's gotten there. So it's not unachievable. Maybe it takes a long time, but, you know, it can be done, you know? So anyway, okay, let's, that's a whole other module. And, you know, and there's no negativity that cannot be purified, right, by if we practice bodhicitta or great compassion. You know, that it has one of those great qualities, you know. Great compassion creates... So if you remember, you know, about karma, right, positive actions create positive results, negative actions create negative results, right? So what that means is if we are aspiring to, you know, having the Buddha's qualities, practice compassion, etc., it's not going to happen by itself. We have to create the causes for it. Everything arises because of causes and conditions, right? We are here because of certain causes and conditions. We were born because of certain causes and conditions, right? It wasn't an accident, right? We are here in this room because of certain causes and conditions, right? To practice compassion, to put these into practice, these instructions into practice, to meet our spiritual teachers, etc., etc., all rises because of causes and conditions, not because somebody else created the causes and conditions, because we ourselves created the causes and conditions, right? So bodhicitta, great compassion, creates this incredible causes for positive results, future causes, right? So if we want to, you know, have the seed of Buddhahood sprout in us, right, we have to create the causes for it, and the cause is bodhicitta. The other great quality of bodhicitta is that it also purifies any negative seeds we have created, right? By the way, seeds here just means, one of the ways they talk about karma is they call it habitual tendencies. These are just in our mind stream. These are just tendencies we create, right? You know, to create either do positive virtuous things or commit non-virtue, whatever it is, right? So bodhicitta has this quality of being, that there's no negativity, no negative seed, right, that cannot be destroyed. So think about it. If we are spending, there's some people who spend their whole day basically in a positive frame of mind, right, in compassion and bodhicitta, in, not self-grasping. Think about the amazing, the amazing positive seeds they're creating, right? And destroying, that's how, as Rinpoche says, he says, skies of merit, right? Skies of merit, or unbelievable amounts of merit, right? It's because of, this is the quality that creates it. And that's why Rinpoche talks so much about this. Every teaching that he gives, right? Every word that he utters to any of his students, right? Is about this. Right, and that's why, is because this has the power to truly free us to cut that ignorance at the root. Right? And finally, I was just thinking about this, so I wrote it down, and like we were talking, currently we can only help in a small way, right? We have two hands and whatever, we have small reach, right? We can only help others, we can maybe give some, we can remove some hunger and so forth and so on, right? But with bodhicitta, this is one of the benefits of cherishing others. With bodhicitta, we can remove the root cause, cause these root ignorance in all other beings. Right, I mean, remember when I started, that was the goal that bodhisattvas and buddhas aspire to, right? And so, cherishing others, just the attitude, right, creates the causes for us being able to do that, right? To be able to, those of you who come to Sunday service or other teachings when Geshe-la gives, there's a prayer that you recite, may all beings have equanimity, free of attachment aversion. May all beings have happiness, the cause of happiness. May all beings be free of suffering and the cause of suffering. And may all beings have good rebirth and the bliss of liberation, right? Or words to that effect, right? So there, those four immeasurables they're called, right? Four immeasurables. So we do that prayer, right? But it's implied in that prayer, but it doesn't say it, because there's a longer prayer that says at the bottom, and may we all beings have equanimity. And may I please, may I be the cause of this. Please, Buddha, help me to be able to do this. Right? So, those four things that we say, it's not just a prayer, may all beings have happiness and cause of happiness, right? It says, may all beings have happiness and cause of happiness. I will take on the responsibility of doing so. Please, Guru Buddha, please help me to be able to do this, right? So that's actually, we don't say it in the prayers, but it's actually a longer prayer. That line is there after every one of those immeasurable lines, So that's the bodhisattva ideal, right? And so if we have that attitude, it's not like, maybe it seems overwhelming. Right? Oh my God, how can I possibly do this, right? But again, it's not about going out and doing this right now, right? It's about having that attitude in our mind. If we're able to have that attitude in our mind every moment, you will find that it lightens our day, right? Because it just brings us out of our own self. One of the, I remember a friend of mine, I only have 5 minutes, so maybe I won't go into the story. Yeah, so it brings us out of ourself, right? We are so wrapped in ourselves, right? you know, if something bad happens, we just go into the spiral. Oh my God, oh, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, and how am I going to get out of this, blah, 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 right? We just go down into that spiral, right? But if we actually put these, you know, the things we will talk about into practice, it's a long introduction, but still. If we put these things into practice, these teachings into practice, you will find that we don't get so wrapped up in ourselves. And when we do that, it automatically, you know, you feel better. You know, that's the thing about getting to neutral, right? I mean, Geshe-la says, you know, going from something negative, think something positive. Well, sometimes it's hard to think something positive. You get yourself to neutral, right? So these things will actually at least get us to neutral. And then maybe even to positive. And one doesn't know. So at least I found it to be so, you know. And if we understand, it's important to understand, you know, and this is why, you know, the stages of the path are, you know, all the teachers, you know, exhort us, if you will, to study the Lam Rim, to study, you know, spiritual teacher, death and impermanence, karma, blah, 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 the refuge, all these stages, right? It's because it's important to have that understanding, right? Because if you do it out of faith, it doesn't have that much value. Well, it has some value. But, you know, Buddhism is not about faith, right? I mean, there is some things that one has to have faith for, because we don't have the capacity to understand quite a lot of it, right? But a lot of things are based on, you know, just things that we can make sense, but we don't actually, you know, it's in here but not in here, you know, like that, you know, it's up here. Intellectually, we understand, but we don't live like that, right? And so these teachings are about that, right, as to how to internalize it, right, to go from here to here, right? I mean, here's an example, right? We all know we're going to die, right? We all know that death is coming. I mean, it's not a surprise, right? Well, somehow it is a surprise at the end, always, but that's another story. But we all know we're going to die, right? But we don't live like that, right? I mean, we think we're going to live forever. I mean, we think about it. We make plans all. I mean, that's not to say we shouldn't make plans, but if you think about how we live, we think we're going to live forever, right? And that's the thing. That's an example of up here but not here, right? And so these teachings, you know, if you put them into practice, you will find that they go more here. And when they go more here, we're able to find happiness. Now, certainly in this life, and maybe if we continue practicing, creating the causes, etc., we continue in our next life, and in our next life, you know, on and on and on, right? And that's how it continues, right? That's how one reaches Buddhahood. So, to finish, I'd like you to, there is, in your readings, if you would, by the way, I'm sorry, do you have any ending questions before I start rolling down the, yes.
So you had talked about the four things and then the four opposite sides of those things, praise and blame being two of them. So we're trying to find happiness, or we seek happiness, and we're trying to find it in one of those eight things, inevitably. And is the way out of that to cherish others? Is that the only thing, or is that?
No, that's not the only thing, but that is one gigantic thing. Okay, so they call it like a two wings of a bird. You need two things to fly, right? So one is, they call it method, and one is wisdom, right? So the method is the great compassion, right? That's what we're talking about here, right? Cherishing others. That's the method wing, right? And there's another wing called wisdom, right? Wisdom is understanding how the self exists, or doesn't exist, for that matter. So that's the, and it's It's understanding that, you know, from a simple way to think about it, it's understanding that, you know, things don't exist the way we think they do, right? So we think, for example, that things, certain things, you know, like things last forever, but we don't realize that everything in this universe is impermanent, right? Everything arises, and along with its arising, you know, it arises due to cause and conditions, right? Like my birth, it arose. The moment my birth happened, that cause and condition arose and my birth happened, its degeneration also rose at the same time. And that's the interesting thing. It's not like it's just somehow later on it just happens to, another cause happens to arise and I die, right? That's not how it works. It says in the text that as you rise, as the causes arose from my birth, the causes for it to degenerate also started at the same time. So at some point, you know, this cause will go down and this cause will rise, and that's you know. So anyway, we think everything is permanent, like my birth, my relationship with my wife, my everything, right? So, you know, if tomorrow, you know, something happens and my wife leaves, I will be shocked, right? But that's not necessarily because, you know, that's because there were causes for it, right? It's not, I mean, I will be shocked, right? But in a way, there is a reason for it. That's all I'm trying to say, right? But we don't know that. We don't see that, right? It's the same reason I'm shocked when if a doctor tells me tomorrow that, oh, well, you've got one day to live, I'll be shocked, right? But if I were truly understood that death is near and that I could die at any moment, I wouldn't be shocked. Right?
So if you're self-aware enough to understand when you're finding happiness in one of those eight things, what is the path? Is it to find someone to be compassionate about, or like,
well,
what
I mean,
do you do when you know that you're...
Well, you have to come to the next class. I'm telling you, right here. It's going to all be revealed. The short answer is that we find a way to transform it by thinking, how can I use this moment to help someone else, whoever that other person is. It can be a general person, right? It doesn't have to be directed at so and so, right? But that's the in the mind, it doesn't need to have that one person, right? But we can think, okay, you know, for example, if I'm in great pain, right, I can think, oh, how terrible it is. I mean, I can't be the only one having this pain, right? There must be thousands, millions of other people in this world having this pain. How much they must be suffering, right? If I'm suffering like this, how much they must be suffering? When that thought arises, right, that's the kind of thing, right? Because when I'm in pain, I just tend to go down in my pain, right? I can't see a way out, right? But these things train our minds in a different way, right? So that's how we do it, right?
Thank you.
One last question. Somebody had a question.
It's a comment.
Oh, wait. Yeah. You gotta use the...
I just want to comment. So, of course, right? So, no, but if you try this about cherishing others, the benefit that I see, and I try it at work,
mm-hmm.
like cherish means to hold dear, okay? And if I try it, I've tried it with nice people and difficult people, I will get the best from them, because that's the point. That was the point to me, and it transformed my relationships with some people. And it doesn't mean, you know, the good people, the nice people, I'll get their best because they're, you know, They're nice, but even like the bad guys, I get the best of them that they don't yell at me.
Right.
And that's, I'm getting, by cherishing them, I'm getting their best. And that's energy I can use elsewhere. That's what I do.
Right. And, you know, if you're in a confrontational situation, others can, you know, when you have this attitude, your body language changes, right? Others can see that, right? So they also, the way they react to you changes, right? So there's a lot of ways these things work. I mean, it's just, you know, many ways. It's just like a web, right? There are many, they work at many different angles. But in any case, unless there's another burning question. Okay. So if you would, readings is 8 verses on thought transformation. And there's a short one called Mahayana Thought Transformation. If you would just do those two readings.
What was the second one again?
The Mahayana Thought Transformation by Lama Zopa Rinpoche. I think this is not too long, 20 pages. It'll go fast. Okay, so let's finish by just doing our dedication quickly. It's on page 235 in the prayer book, so we'll just do the first two verses. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow, and may that which has arisen not diminish but increase more and more. Thank you very much. I hope to see you next time.